Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 8th, 2016. Here we are in the dog days of August, I think you would call it. We're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great. Great to have you with us, as always. So, D.R., as we have spoken more than once, the Obama administration has been slowly making its impact on climate change more and more pronounced. I mean, the president has enormous power when it comes to things like climate change. Not absolute, thank God, but he has a lot of power. And when the power of the presidency is focused on something, good things can happen. One of the things that happened this past week was that the federal government, the Obama administration, finally released guidelines saying that all new federal government projects have to take climate change into account in their environmental impact statement, right? Did I get that right, DR? Tell me, what's the story there?
Yes, that's correct. This stems from a 1969 law known as the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires what's known as environmental assessments and environmental impact statements for all federal projects. The Obama administration has now set guidelines saying that under NEPA, the federal government now must, in terms of coming up with new projects, in terms of doing their environmental impact statements or environmental assessments, they must determine the climate impact of these new projects. So this is going to have significant ramifications in terms of the way government actions, government policies, government decisions are tailored to take climate change into account. This is something that climate hawks have been pushing for a number of years now as a means of sort of deterring some of the sort of pro-fossil fuel actions by the federal government. And this could be a game changer in terms of the government's ability to reduce carbon pollution.
And I think that, I mean, just to put it in concrete terms, I mean, we have talked here about an organization, a U.S. government organization called the Bureau of Land Management, right? And the Bureau of Land Management, they are in charge of allocating coal leases on federal lands, right? And so evidently as part of this, under these new rules, the Bureau of Land Management has to take into account the climate impact of allowing coal leases to go forward.
Exactly.
Which is at the very least is an issue, because you can say, gee, the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, could just say, oh, we're not going to emit much carbon as we plow the trucks around digging up the coal. Or it could say, gee, when you burn all this coal that's coming off of federal land, it will have an enormous climate impact. And I mean, that discussion will be an important one to have, especially related to fossil fuel projects on federal lands. That's a big deal, right?
Exactly. It also has an impact on the Federal Energy Regulatory Agency. And as Think Progress notes, that agency is responsible for approving interstate natural gas pipelines. And you do kind of wish that the Obama administration had issued this requirement for under the NEPA prior to the decision by FERC to greenlight the pipeline in West Roxbury that's become such a source of a controversy. Maybe if they had considered the climate impact of that pipeline, it would not have been allowed to go through.
But, I mean, all the new pipelines that are coming are going to have to pass the test that you now see is a very important one. And I bet you dollars to donuts somebody's going to start a lawsuit in the West Roxbury lateral case and run back and try and get – require FERC to now do a climate impact of that pipeline. And that's what I would do. I mean, I have no inside information, but that's what I would do in a heartbeat. But I mean, so these things are small sort of bureaucratic things that the Obama administration has called for, but they do have long-term important consequences, right? Because once you start calculating the carbon consequence of these things the federal government's doing, that's huge, right?
And it was, in fact, the Natural Resources Defense Council, President Ria Su, who called it a game changer and basically said that, you know, this will definitely have a significant impact on whether or not the federal government allows certain projects to go through that will have a massive carbon footprint. So that carbon footprint could be reduced substantially. And this is, you know, it's a great achievement for Obama's climate legacy. He was the guy who said at the 2013 inaugural that he would respond to the threat of climate change. And this is certainly a very effective way of responding to that threat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's that, which is good news, right? Obama, with the NEPA requiring climate consequences to be considered for new projects. But then here in Massachusetts, there's good news as well. So for people who aren't paying close attention, there is it's now 8 years old at least, I don't know what you call it. An organization called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. The acronym goes RGGI, and it's called REGI, okay? Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And essentially, it is a cap and trade program among nine of the northeastern states to cap and trade emissions pollution permits for power plants. And it turns out it's been extremely successful. That in the New England state, there's something like 37% less carbon pollution. In fact, the consumer electricity rates have gone down. So it's really a good story. So tell me the story, DR.
This program, which has been an extraordinary success, is currently under review. There's consideration of trying to extend this program to 2030 and to lower the cap. Think Progress notes that under the current structure, the region's cap on emissions decreases by 2.5% each year until 2020. In order to reach the 2030 standard set by the Clean Power Plan, the emissions cap will have to double to 5% each year. And there are
we're saying there's a cap on the emissions, which essentially means there's a maximum amount of emissions that are allowed in the state, right? And it doesn't care where the carbon comes from, there's this aggregate cap, and we say the cap is going to be lowered by 5%. So each year, the cap is reduced, and of course that makes the permission to fill that cap up gets more and more valuable, right?
Yes, it's a brilliant way of encouraging more clean energy and more aggressive efforts to reduce carbon pollution. And according to the environmental group CERES, there are some 70 companies, including among others Eileen Fisher and Staples and Stonyfield Farms and VF Corporation, and they are encouraging the governors of nine states who basically oversee REGI to strengthen this cap and to continue this program, which has been, again, a smashing success and a testament to the reality that one can reduce carbon pollution and yet maintain and even improve economic growth. REGI kills dead the argument that taking serious action on climate change will damage the economy. It just renders that argument as the falsehood it is. It's a brilliant thing. It should be extended and continued as long as possible.
And as we've said, I mean, it may be that, on the happy day when President Obama's clean energy plan is, let out of jail, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. When the Supreme Court finally rules on that, we hope that the Supreme Court rules in a favorable way on that. It's conceivable that other states would want to join the RGGI, REGI, in order to satisfy the president's climate plan. And the article I read said how the REGI, the RGGI model, is a good one to extend into other parts of the economy. Because it clearly works, right? And you can somehow begin to think about how to introduce it into transportation or into residential efficiency. I mean, there's, somehow with these other parts of the economy that are not covered purely under electric power generation, right? Mm-hmm. It's a model that could be used, right?
Definitely. And it goes to a point that I think it was a guy's name is John Hoffmeister, who's the former head of Shell. He was on Meet the Press in 2014, and he talked about how brilliant cap and trade is as a policy and lamented the political demonization of the policy. I wonder if he's looking at the success of cap and trade here in the Northeast and this effort to have it extended. And I wonder if he would consider lending his voice to this effort by these other corporate entities to say, let's keep this thing going because it's worked marvelously.
Well, and just to connect all the dots, at the end of all of our podcasts, we talk about putting a price on carbon. And the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is an explicit way to put a price on carbon pollution, because you have to buy the permission, you have to pay money for the permission to emit the pollution. And of course, we've also talked, in contrast, the other way to put a price on carbon is not to have a cap and trade program, but simply to have a fee on when you buy oil or gas. Right? And that's an alternate way. So there are these two competing ideas. One is cap and trade, and we have an actual cap and trade system in place here in the Northeast that's worked. And the alternate version of reality is what's called a carbon tax, but it's a carbon fee. And one of those is working out in British Columbia, right? And so here you have two alternate, equally effective methods of putting a price on carbon that don't crash the economy and have great climate benefits. So I guess it just goes to prove that both of the proposals, either of those proposals, are good ones, right? And you can, now you're simply arguing about which one's better. Right?
Exactly.
Is cap and trade better than carbon fee? That's a debate for another day.
As I like to say, it's good for the ecology and good for the economy.
Absolutely. I mean, so I guess the other thing, we'll put up a link. Turns out that the cap and trade program in California is coming under some fire, a little bit of legal fire over whether or not they even have the right to collect the money. But part of the issue is that the way the cap and trade stuff works here in New England, not California, is that there is an auction on a quarterly or annual basis. I forget, some, you know, reasonable period. They auction off the permits, the permission to pollute, right? So big companies have to come and bid to buy the permission to pollute, and then that's how much they that's how much they can emit, or they can sell those permissions to other people if they make money. Out in California, it turns out they've been so effective at reducing their carbon pollution that effectively the auction market has collapsed. Because, you know, everyone is already reduced so much, they don't need to buy more permission because they're way below the limits. And so there's some discussion about, you know, what's going to happen out in California. The proponents of the California cap and trade say it's a mark of how successful the program has been. But I guess the state legislatures are upset because they expected more revenue from the cap and trade program than they got. So. So we will compare the California program to Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative here in the Northeast as we move forward. But there's, I think in all these cases, the program, if run properly, can work well.
It's going to be an East Coast, West Coast thing.
That's right. It's back then, the Lakers and the Celtics, those old days, huh? Speaking of environmental terribleness, I saw a thing, DR, that said up in Finland, there is, because the permafrost is thawing, there are, I guess, buried or reindeer that have been dead and under the ground for decades and decades, but they died of anthrax. So as the permafrost melts, all of a sudden there's an outbreak of anthrax in Finland. That's like, oh my God, Santa's reindeer are going to all die of anthrax now. I mean, isn't that terrible?
Yeah, the story I saw was that it was taking place in Siberia, and it's a state of emergency that has been imposed throughout the region of Siberia, according to NBC News. And it's...
that's about the right reaction. Like, oh my God.
You just realized that, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature, is it? Or to pollute Mother Nature.
Right. Well, I think that most of the people listening to this podcast get it. So there's no sense banging that drum too hard. But boy, there are consequences that keep popping up that you would not have thought of, right?
Exactly.
Not thought of ahead of time. Well, Well, let's see, DR. I guess that's where we should end it. We've got good news on the federal government and here in New England on Reggie and NEPA. So that's good. We'll call that a win for this week, right?
Definitely.
We'll tell our friends that we'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog associated with this podcast. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us there. You can find us on Facebook at Mass Climate Action. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can always find us on iTunes. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put some kind of a price, I don't care what kind, some kind of a price on carbon. So, DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.